You're back on the record at 12:55.
Oh,
11:55. I'm sorry.
11:55.
All right. Okay.
Wow.
All right, thank you, everybody. All right, so Steve, can proceed?
Yes, thank you. This day we'll call Dr. Karen Donahue. Dr. Donahue, can you please state your name for the record?
Karen Donahue.
And where are you employed?
At the Board of Physical Therapy.
And can you please state what is your educational background?
I have both a master's and a doctorate in physical therapy.
Okay, and how, if you just want to say approximate, how long have you been a physical therapist?
29 years.
Okay. Thank you. And how long have you worked for the board?
Total is going on 12 years.
All right. And what is your current position now?
I'm the executive director.
And then prior to that?
I was the investigator.
All right. Okay. So, and you investigated all complaints that came to the board?
Yes.
Okay. And then prior to becoming the executive director, were you the main investigator for the board?
I was the only investigator for the board.
All right. Thank you. All right. Turning to this case, how did you get involved in it?
We received a complaint from Dr. Goldberg.
Okay. All right. And that's already been admitted in State's Exhibit 1. And after you received the complaint, what did you do next in your investigation?
We performed the investigation.
All right. And did you go ahead and review the response from the respondent in this case that's already been admitted in within State's Exhibit 2?
I did.
Okay. All right. And then after you received that response, did you go ahead and subpoena records?
I did.
Okay. All right. And explain to the board what you subpoenaed and what documents you did receive from that connection.
So there was a series of subpoenas. So the first subpoena was for the patient's schedule to figure out who was where, when. Once the schedule was received, and I think that took almost two subpoenas to get the full schedule that we were looking for, the schedule was reviewed. We identified, I think, up to 30 patients that we thought would be able to demonstrate if this was going on, if back in action. We subpoenaed all 30 records, including the billing from those records. It took another several subpoenas in order to get most of the files to be complete. We never did receive the billing from the subpoenas that we sent to back in action. As a result, we sent a subpoena directly and did an on-site subpoena to the billing company to receive the billing records that you have for review.
Okay. So what I'm understanding, back in action, as far as their disclosure pursuant to the board subpoena, was not what? They weren't prompt or they weren't complete?
They were not complete.
Okay. All right. And then just to help the board understand maybe some of the quality of these records, when you received the records, were they all organized in nice chronological order matched up with the billing?
No, the records were actually shuffled. So everything that we had asked for, it had come shuffled. What was printed on page one had nothing to do necessarily with what was printed on page on the back side of that paper, and the records were not in order. So we did spend quite a bit of time actually sorting out and straightening out what all the records were.
Okay. All right. And then as far as the billing records, those back in action, just what did they do? They just failed to disclose those?
They just failed to. I believe that in the end they sent us four dates of service, which was not what we had asked for. So then we took it upon ourselves to do an on-site subpoena to obtain the rest of the records from the billing company directly.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. And then you made mention that you were looking for records that would possibly illuminate what the allegations in the complaint were. Can you please elaborate on that?
So the complaint stated that Ms. Glaske, the allegations were that Ms. Glaske was allowing patients and encouraging patients to engage in the services of massage therapy and acupuncturists. So the investigation first went, I wanted to know the acupuncturist's schedule so that we could figure out who they were actually seeing and under who. So we wanted patient records out of that. We wanted patient records to determine who was seeing the massage therapist, when was that occurring, and so we picked patients' records out of that, and then we also picked in times where we saw that Ms. Lasky was in the facility, but the schedule did not indicate there was any other physical therapist in the facility. We also, the schedule identified times when no physical therapist was in many of the facilities, and acupuncturists and massage schedules were existed. So based upon all of that, again, we brought it down to about 30 records that we subpoenaed out of that. We used, I think, 12 of those records for the cases that have come before you. We used 3 of those records in this specific case against Ms. Lasky.
All right, thank you. And I'd like to draw your attention, that would be to State's Exhibits 5, 6, and 7. 5 relates to the physical therapy records for patient SR. 6 is the physical therapy records for patient EM. And 7 is the physical therapy records for patient YG. Are these true and accurate copies of the records that you received from Back in Action for these 3 patients?
They are.
Okay. And have you reviewed them all?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. The state would, just for sake of moving this case along, would move those state's exhibits 5 through 7 in evidence?
So moved.
Thank you. Did you also obtain the back in action schedule in this case?
I did.
Okay. And is that contained in State's Exhibit 8?
It is.
Okay. And did you review the both the patient schedule and those treatment records in the formulation of your investigative report?
I did.
Okay. And is your investigative report contained in State's Exhibit 4?
It is.
Okay. All right. And is State's Exhibit 4, that does contain your investigative report, is this the report that was presented to the board in their consideration of this case?
It was.
Okay. All right. Thank you. The state would move State's Exhibit 4 in evidence. That would be the investigative report that was compiled in this case.
So moved.
Okay. Thank you. Right. Now, during the course of the investigation, after you received all the subpoenaed records, you did your analysis and you drafted your investigative report, or partially drafted it, did you interview Ms. Lasky?
I did.
Okay. And was that in January of 2018?
It was.
Okay, thank you. All right. And what were some of the areas that you covered in that interview, just very generally?
Supervision, her role in the company, her role as administrator of the company, and specific findings related to the 3 records.
Okay. All right. And was that interview tape recorded?
It was.
Okay. And it obviously was tape recorded with the consent of Ms. Lasky. Is that true?
That's correct.
Okay. And then was that subsequently transcribed by a certified court reporter?
It was.
Okay. Thank you. And is that the transcript that's contained in State's Exhibit 9?
It is.
Okay. The state would move State's Exhibit 9. That would be the transcript of the investigative interview that both Ms. Lasky has testified about and that Dr. Donahue has laid foundation for.
So moved.
Okay, thank you.
And Ms. Gaskin, did you intend to move Exhibit 8 into evidence as well?
Yes, I thought I did. I thought I moved 8 into evidence after I moved 5, 6, and 7, but if I haven't, I'd like to move 8.
I don't remember 8.
The 8 is the back in action.
No, I don't remember you moving it. So.
Okay, I'm going to move that in evidence. All right, thank you. So at this point, State's Exhibits 1 through 9 have all been admitted in evidence. Thank you. All right, Dr. Donahue, I'd like to draw your attention to your investigative report regarding your analysis of the patient records. So in each one of these cases, and I'm going to, let's see, I believe mine is not 8 stamped. So what I'm going to do is, it's actually page 7.
Okay, so the Bates stamp for the start of the analysis is page 75.
Okay, and that would be on, would that correspond with page 66 of your actual investigative report?
Okay, that's correct.
All right. And this was your calculation after reviewing all the medical records in this case. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. All right. So you initially started with allegations regarding concerns regarding making truthful statements throughout the investigation. And I would just say that those would be, as far as in the practice of the profession, could you please summarize what you included in your investigation under 1 and 2 of that page?
Under ARS 32-2044?
Yes, that would be under 1.
So most of these findings were related to fraudulent representations. It had to do with Ms. Lasky engaging in documenting and billing for the initial evaluation of SR, engaging in the performance documentation and billing of a real evaluation for EM, the lack of documentation for general supervision when the schedule identified that such instances occur, the provision of treatment and billed services in which the patient may not have actually had an appointment or been present in the facility, the irregularities potentially in billing for patient EM, the performance of another reeval for EM, the potential billing irregularities for patient YG, and some irregularities with the actual time that the patient was in the facility.
Okay. All right. And that was based on your review of the records in this case?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, turning to the next page, and this has to deal with failing to maintain adequate patient records. You heard the testimony earlier on Ms. Lasky, and she says that she did admit that there were some deficiencies in her record keeping. One of the issues in your report deals with having sufficient documentation to enable another therapist to assume the care of the patient at any part of the treatment intervention. Can you explain what that standard of care is in Arizona?
So that is a minimum standard of care that's in our rules that state that the minimum standard is that another physical therapist would be able to assume the care of the patient at any point in intervention without having, these are my words now, without having to perform a reevaluation to continue with care. So that is our minimum standard in our rules.
Okay. All right. And based on your review of the patient records and with patient SR, patient EM, and patient YG, did you find deficiencies in those records?
We found deficiencies in patient SR 9 times, deficiencies in patient's EM 8 times, deficiencies in patient YG 9 times, 9 dates of service.
Okay. All right. And then as far as failing to maintain minimum standards regarding 2044-20, again, we have the initial evaluation on patient SR and then the 2 reevaluations of patient EM. Those are also included in documentation. Is that because it is a... It's the performance by a physical therapist assistant is not in compliance with the law regarding the that those are duties solely for a physical therapist.
Correct. A physical therapist assistant is unable by law to perform an initial evaluation, a reevaluation, or a discharge.
Okay. And just to turn to the standard of care in that case, is a physical therapist assistant trained in school to conduct any type of evaluations on patients?
They are trained to do assessments, but they are not trained to do the specific, as identified by law, evaluations, examinations, reevaluations, or discharges.
All right, and can you give, just for the record, a general explanation of what level of education and skill goes into actually performing an initial evaluation of a physical therapy patient that presented the first time, even if they've been a prior patient in that clinic before?
You need to take the subjective, you need to do objective tests and measures, you need to clinically and use your clinical rationale skills to determine a diagnosis, and based upon that diagnosis, develop a plan of care.
Okay, and the plan of care that is developed in that initial evaluation, is this the plan of care that directs all other caregivers, whether they be physical therapists or assistive personnel, in treating that patient to reaching those end goals?
Not exactly. The plan of care is to assist the physical therapist when they determine to delegate to assistive personnel the items that they would like assistance with by those individuals.
Okay. So, but the physical therapist is the one that is developing the parameters for that patient care?
Always.
Always. Okay. And the physical therapist has no legal authority to make those decisions on behalf of the patient?
The physical therapist assistant is prohibited from making those decisions by law.
Okay. And indeed, if a physical therapist assistant does engage in crossing the line and performing initial evaluations and reevaluation, is there a danger to the public?
Of course.
And that patient?
Yes.
Right. And is it based on the fact that they lack the skill and education and legal authority to engage in that level?
Yes.
Assessment.
They do not have the same evaluation skills that a physical therapist does.
Okay.
They don't have any evaluation skills.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. Turning back to your analysis under 2044-20, when the patient records were reviewed in this case, did you compare the electronic signature of the individual that provided the care, and in this case, Ms. Lasky, as a physical therapist assistant, to the date of service? Actually, in other words, the date that she finalized the note versus the date of service?
Yes.
Okay. All right. And in Ms. Lasky's interview, isn't it true that she told us that the policy of Back in Action was to actually have all those notes finalized within 1 week?
That was her testimony.
Okay. All right. And as far as the standard of when notes should be finalized, is it a fair statement to say that notes should be finalized as contemporaneously with the date of service to ensure that the documentation is accurate and valid and reflects the patient care that was provided?
Correct.
Okay. All right. And in this case, did you find deviations from both the Back in Action, as far as what they stated, the 1 week, and the contemporaneous requirement and the contemporaneousness of writing those notes?
So when comparing the date of service to the actual close of the note with the signature, there were instances that exceeded a reasonable time frame to accurately represent the treatment visit.
Okay. All right. Is this included in number 5 on the bottom of your actually investigative report, page 67?
It is.
Okay. And are these instances when it was greater than 2 weeks that those notes were finalized?
Equal to or greater than.
Okay. Equal to or greater than. Thank you. All right. And for patient SR, were there 3 instances?
Correct.
All right. And in fact, as far as we'll get into the specifics when we get into the patient records, what about regarding patient EM?
There were 8 instances.
And then patient YG?
There were 3.
Okay. All right. And then if the notes are finalized, let's say 2 months afterwards, does that call into question their validity?
Yes, because you need to, the point of the documentation is to accurately reflect what went on in the date of service of the date that you are providing the intervention. Depending on patient load and vacation schedules and all kinds of, you know, things that can interrupt that, the longer it goes, the less likely that the memory or documentation accurately represents the visit. And so the longer the note goes, the more unlikely is representative of the care that was provided.
Okay, thank you. All right, now turning on to engaging in substandard care by a physical therapist assistant. This would be on page number 68. And it includes exceeding the authority to perform tasks selected and delegated by the supervising licensee, regardless of whether actual injury to the patient is established. All right, so that is the standard of practice that's codified within the Physical Therapy Act. Did you find specific instances where there was a deviation?
Yes.
Okay, all right. And are those contained in, that would be page 68 through 71?
Yes.
Okay. And again, we're having some repeat instances here that started off with documentation. But could you please summarize 1 through 6?
1 through 6.
Yes.
Okay. So 1 through 6 states basically, it's easier just to read it, that okay. Ms. Lasky confirms in her interview that she performed a documented initial evaluation and reevaluation as directed by Keith Thandry. She confirms in her interview that on date of service 4/19/17 that she independently made the decision to perform a manipulation to the lumbar spine following documentation the patient was seen in the ED with exacerbated radicular symptoms. Ms. Lassie confirms in her interview that she engaged in the provision of a manipulation or HVLAT for patients for the past 5 years without engaging in continuing education to obtain competence. Ms. Lasky confirms in her interview that Mr. Fandry taught her how to perform the HVLAT manipulation because PTAs are not allowed to take manipulation courses. She confirms in her interview that she was not providing treatment to patient EM on dates of service 3/21/17 when she documented and billed a reevaluation that included the modification of objective tests and measures, goals, and G-codes. And number 6, Ms. Lasky documents the initial evaluation of SR on date of service 12/31/16. She closes the note on February 8, 2017. Mr. Fandry co-signs that note on February 9, 2018.
All right, and I'd like to take a pause there and talk about the HVLAT. I know that Ms. Lasky has already stated to the board that she is no longer engaging in that, and she recognizes now that that was inappropriate on her part. But I just really want to lay some foundation as far as what is required to go ahead and perform that. Is it required that a PT document their preliminary evaluation to even make a determination if this patient is a candidate for this type of manipulation?
Yes.
Okay. All right. And we will get to the specific notes, but from your review of that, was that even, well, what would that involve a determination to see if somehow the person had like osteoporosis or some type of history of stroke? What would fall within that evaluation of the individual?
Well, it's the responsibility of the physical therapist to take all of the subjective and objective factors into consideration before determining whether to perform a manipulation.
Okay, and would that be something that would be documented within the medical record?
Yes.
Okay. All right. And then when it's actually being performed, does this maneuver require continuous evaluation of the joint while it's being performed?
That is my understanding. I do not perform manipulations myself.
Okay. All right. But you are aware of
yes.
what the standards are and what is required?
I am.
Okay. Thank you. All right. As far as the risk of the procedure, are there risks that are carried with it, even if it's done by a competent person?
Yes.
Okay. And would those be stroke, increased pain, very outlier death?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you. So you agree with me if someone is not trained, those risks would be greater if
of course.
They were performing that?
Right. Okay. Correct.
All right. Thank you. All right. Turning back to your investigative report. On page 69, we again have 7 through 9 deal with the reevaluation of patients EM on specific dates of service. Can you talk about the concerns regarding, again, a PTA performing a reevaluation of a patient as opposed to a PT, other than the fact that it deviates from the law? What are the safety concerns?
Well, I don't know if there are safety concerns, but the record would not be reflective of the patient's current status, which is the point of the reevaluation. The point of the reevaluation is to pause, say this is how the patient is doing. We know that based upon objective tests and measures. The physical therapist then uses their critical thinking to determine if they have to modify the plan of care, continue with the plan of care, and how to proceed with treatment. So all of that can only be performed by a physical therapist. So the harm is that it wasn't done. So regardless of the documentation by Ms. Lasky, the reality is it was never done. No one was doing a re-eval on the patient to determine if the plan of care was appropriate or not appropriate.
Okay. All right. So if a physical therapist does not engage in this re-evaluation, that would affect the effectiveness and safety of all future care of the patient. Is that a fair statement?
That's a fair statement.
Okay. All right. And when, under our law, is a physical therapist required to reevaluate a patient?
So it depends on the type of supervision. Mm-hmm. So under on-site supervision, mm-hmm. the law requires that a reevaluation occurs at the time that the plan of care requires it. Either the patient exceeds the plan of care or they're not meeting the level of the plan of care. Under general supervision, that must occur every fourth visit or 30 days, regardless of the plan of care. So it must occur every fourth visit by the physical therapist if they are supervising under general supervision.
Okay, and then of course, if there's a change in the patient's condition for either the better or for the worse, would that justify?
Right, a change in patient status and a change in the plan of care. Correct.
All right, thank you. All right, turning to number 10, what else did you file? Did you determine based on these records at this specific time regarding patient SR? The substandard care number 10.
So
what happened in that case?
So in the case of SR, the difficulty started in the beginning when the initial evaluation was performed and documented by Ms. Lasky. No physical therapist ever performed a evaluation. Keep walking. There you go. No physical therapist ever performed an examination of patient SR until almost 4 months later.
Okay. All right. So when the patient was initially seen in this case, who performed the initial evaluation?
Ms. Lasky documented that she performed and stated in her interview that she did perform the initial evaluation of patient SR.
Okay. All right. And then the patient was treated for several months without
a physical therapist ever documenting an examination.
All right. Thank you. Turning to number 11, documentation of treatment that may not enable another therapist to assume the care at any part of the treatment and intervention. I think you touched on this before, but if you would want to summarize the number of times you found that in each patient record.
Same as it was before. It was 9 visits for patient SR. It was 8 visits for patient EM. And it was 9 visits for patient YG.
All right. And then did you... turning to page 70, make specific findings in number 12 regarding exceeding her scope of authority.
In specific to patient SR on dates of service 3/24/17, Ms. Lasky documents that, and I'm just going to quote, patient likely experienced inflammatory response to seemingly intact rotator cuff muscles and strength and function, which the identification is that exceeds her authority to determine the integrity of the rotator cuff.
Okay, thank you. All right, and then turning to, again, the performance of the HVLAT, that is contained in 16 through 18. And again, that was found in both patient SR and patient YG's medical records.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. And then as far as... were there instances when Ms. Lasky engaged in treating areas that had not been assessed by a physical therapist?
Yes.
Okay. All right. And what would be the concern in that case of a physical therapist assistant treating areas that had never been assessed by a physical therapist?
A physical therapist needs to examine the region in order to know what to delegate for those interventions to occur. So when somebody independently outside of the physical therapist engages in treatment to regions of the body in which the patient has not been examined, there runs a risk of injury or damage.
Okay. And would you consider, even if that does occur with a physical therapist assistant, is that something that a physical therapist should be aware of?
The physical therapist is the sole responsible party for the patient. And so, yes, the physical therapist is always responsible for anything that occurs, whether they've delegated it or failed to delegate it, whether they're supervising or failed to supervise. The buck stops with the physical therapist.
And the remaining analysis that you have on page 70 and 71 that are in 1920, 21, and 22, those would really be dealing with both treating areas that haven't been evaluated and the failure to communicate with the physical therapist regarding the patient's status.
So in two instances on Data of Service 3/2017 per patient, you have a period of time where the patient has not been in the facility that exceeds 4 weeks. A reevaluation was required by the physical therapist to engage that patient back to determine that the plan of care is still appropriate or change in the plan of care is required. That reevaluation did not occur, and Ms. Lasky continues with the previous plan of care without the documentation indicating that a reevaluation by a physical therapist occurred. That occurred in that instance. It occurred again for patient YG on 7/8/17. I'm sorry, 3/8/17.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Now, Dr. Donahue, I'd like to turn your attention to some of the medical records in this case that we can go ahead and take a look at. And if we want to take a look at, it would be contained in States Exhibit 7, and that would be patient YG. Draw your attention to Bates 308. Okay. All right, and this would be the date of service of 12/10 of 2016.
Correct.
In this case, can you tell us, based on the diagnosis at the top of the page, what was this patient being treated for?
Low back pain and pain in the left hip.
Okay. And have you reviewed the previous documents and dates of service in this case that preceded this date that Ms. Lasky treated?
Yes.
Okay. All right. And in fact, there was, in this case, there was an initial evaluation on date 300 that was actually performed by a physical therapist in this case. Now, taking a look at this date of service, and you may also, if you wish, take a look at your investigative report for that date. As far as the date of service is 12/10 through 2016, when was this document co-signed?
This document, the note was completed by Ms. Lasky on January 30th, 2017, approximately 7 weeks after the provision of treatment.
Okay. And what about the physical therapist? When did they sign
it? It was co-signed by Tricia Lish the following day on January 31st.
Okay. So this is approximately 7 weeks after the date of service.
Correct.
Okay. All right. And again, does that call into question the validity of the note?
Potentially.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And then as far as respondent documented findings and treatments relating to the upper spine, cervical spine, SI joint, from your review of the records, are those areas that were assessed by a physical therapist?
They were not.
Thank you. Turning to base number 322, that would relate to the next date of service that respondent was able to provide treatment to patient YG. Again, on this, what is the date of service and what is the date that it was co-signed?
The date of service was 12/31/2016. It was co-signed on February 1st of 2017.
Okay. And again,
I'm sorry, co-signed. It was closed by Ms. Lasky on February 1st, 2017.
All right. Was that February 1st or?
February 1st.
February 1st and then February 6th, it was co-signed by the PT.
That's correct.
Okay. All right, thank you. And as far as in this, under the subjective, what were the complaints?
Well, the complaints were right-sided neck pain. It's just I'm just quoting and reading what the subjective words are. Right-sided neck pain, shoulder blade pain, mid back radiating to right hip, period.
Okay. All right, and then what should have happened in this case regarding those complaints?
I'm sorry.
The supervising physical therapist be aware of what condition the patient was?
If this is a change in status for the patient, then yes, the physical therapist should be made aware of the change in status in the patient before the PTA would engage in treatment.
Okay. And again, this is an example of using the HVLA. Can you please describe what type of treatment Ms. Lasky provided to this patient on this day?
So under the assessment, it's documented reported reduction in symptoms post-treatment and responded very well to lumbar and thoracic HVLA and increased home exercise compliance encouraged. The problem is that a physical therapist has not examined the thoracic spine to which the manipulation had occurred.
All right. And again, under the assessment, it says it has a statement. Patient requires skilled therapy to restore prior level of function utilizing the treatment modalities described in this plan of care. Is that an appropriate notation in a physical therapist assistant note, or does that appear to be like a...
Well, that's a goal, and that... Is that what you're reading, the goal?
Yes.
So
no.
I'm
sorry, it's right under the assessment. Patient
right.
Requires.
So those are patient requires. Oh, skilled therapy to restore prior level of function utilizing the treatment. It looks like that's a standardized sentence, but it's not a sentence necessarily that the physical therapist assistant should be clicking, because it technically talks about somebody making a determination that skilled care needs to continue, which should be the physical therapist.
Okay. And again, in all of the notes that you reviewed in this case, is there any type of documentation regarding any kind of delegation, supervision, collaboration, anything?
And all of the records that we reviewed, there was no documentation of the supervision that was occurring.
Thank you.
Or of any communication that occurred.
Thank you. I'd like you to draw your attention to Bates for 350 in this case. And that would be the note of January 23rd, 2017. Okay. On the top of the page, Dr. Donahue, it says date of service 1/23/17. And again, when was this signed by Ms. Lasky and when was it co-signed by the DPT?
Hang on. We'll get there.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, date of service 1/23/17. Ms. Lasky completes the note on February 22nd, 2017, co-signed 2 days later by Keith Bandry.
And again, that is not compliant with what the standard would be to writing notes.
It calls into question the validity of the documentation.
Okay, thank you. All right. Again, this is another note that refers to right upper thoracic pain. And do you have any opinion about what should have been done at that point within this medical record?
So the objective findings document a quote, regional mobility deficits and extension of rotation, T5 through 2-8, which is being determined by Ms. Lasky. The examination of thoracic spine has not occurred by a physical therapy, and Ms. Lasky would be unable to make those kind of determinations and should not have documented such in the record.
Thank you. Now, I'd like to take a look at the billing on this because there seems to be a little, that doesn't seem to coincide with what's going on the flow sheet. The billing in this case, if I'm reading this correctly, there was two units of manual therapy and one unit of therapeutic exercises. Is that correct?
No, that's not what I have.
That's not what you have.
You have one unit of therapeutic exercise and three units of manual therapy.
And three units of manual therapy. Okay. And then what was the length of time that this patient was in the facility?
The documentation is for 1 hour, from 5:30 to 6:30.
Okay. All right. And then if we go ahead and take a look at the flow sheet.
Do you know what FAPES number that would be?
Yeah, I'm going to take you to 291.
Thank you. And dates of service 123, yes.
And that was kind of hard to read. Does that seem to sync up as far as the timing?
So what we show, well, this is hard to read. So what we do show is 40 minutes of manual therapy along with 15 minutes in the manual therapy category, which would be a total of 55 minutes. And then we have a series of exercises down below that have check boxes in it indicating that they were performed. So if you use the manual therapy timeline of 55 minutes, that would have led approximately 4 or 5 minutes to perform all of the exercises below. So there is some conflict between the time that the patient is reported in the clinic as well as the time that is documented on the flow sheet.
Okay, and that would reflect on the accuracy of the documentation of patient care.
Correct, and the accuracy of the billing.
Okay, all right, thank you. All right, now turning to Bates 355, and that would be for a date of service of March 8th. 2017, can you please describe...
Did you say 355?
I'm saying 358.
Thank you. Date of service 38. Yes.
Okay. And when was this co-signed?
Co-signed?
Signed and co-signed by the DPT.
Okay, so it is the documentation is concluded by Ms. Lasky on March 17th, co-signed 3 days later by Mr. Dandry.
And then as far as the current complaint, can you please read the current complaint and gains into the record?
So the subjective quote is, reports elevated right upper back and low back pain, which she correlates to increased stress, period.
Okay, all right. And then if you would like to take a look at Bates number 354, this is a note that was written by a licensed this is by the licensed massage therapist. Is that subjective identical to the other?
The subjective is identical to the documentation and data service 128.17. That data service was documented by the massage therapist.
Okay. All right, thank you. Is it common that there's identical notations within the records?
Is it common? Yes. Should there be some copying or pasting forward or that kind of thing? No. But in this case, it's unlikely that the patient reported the exact same thing and was written by the two different providers with the exact same words in the exact same order.
Okay. All right. Thank you for those observations. All right. Turning next to Bates 366, this would be the treatment note of 316-2017. All right. And... Okay, there is, again, reference, we have some reference to the thoracic spine. And again, do we have anything that indicates that that initial diagnosis above has been changed or there's been any reevaluation of that, of those changes to the thoracic spine?
I do not believe, I'd have to go look, that there's been a reevaluation of this patient by a physical therapist, if that's your question.
But yes. Okay. Do you want to just briefly look? I believe the last one was...
You want me to briefly? Okay.
Briefly scan.
All right. Is not a reevaluation.
Okay. So this would this be an instance where the physical therapist assistant went ahead and should have contacted the physical therapist because of the changes?
What changes are you referring to?
That are in the current complaint.
So on 316, the subjective was right-sided mid to low back ache, base of neck feels stiff and burns. The neck has never been assessed, or the cervical spine has never been assessed by a physical therapist. This is a new report from the patient at this time, so it would be advised that the physical therapist is aware that the patient is having different complaints.
Okay, but in this case, when you look under the assessment and the diagnosis, Ms. Lasky documents that patient responded very well to the upper thoracic HVLAT with recorded SXX relief following the treatment. So is this treating an area that was not assessed?
Right. The thoracic spine in this patient's case was never examined by a physical therapist throughout the entire episode of care.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And in this case, there was a potentially serious treatment modality that was used by Ms. Lasky without consulting the physical therapist.
There does not appear to be any delegation or supervision by Mr. Bandry.
Turning your attention to Bates 370. Again, this is... a date on 3/18/2017, and what exactly is the current complaint by the patient?
So on 3/18, the complaint is persistent mid-thoracic spine symptoms and right hip pain.
Okay. All right. And then what was the, what kind of treatment did the patient receive in this case again?
So the documentation indicates that the treatment was performed to the thoracic spine.
Okay.
And a manipulation is documented as being performed.
Okay. And again, there's no indication of any kind of delegation or any supervision by the physical therapist.
There is not.
Okay. All right. And then how long was the client patient in the clinic on this day?
It says from 8:30 a.m. to 9:30 a.m. for 1 hour.
Okay. And then what was billed?
One unit of therapeutic exercise, 3 units of manual therapy.
And if we turn to the flow sheet on Bates 294, how does the billing compare to what exactly is on the flow sheet? Are they consistent or inconsistent?
So the documentation indicates that the patient was in the clinic from 8:30 to 9:30 with 59 minutes of treatment or 60 minutes of treatment. The flow sheet on this date of service, 3/18, let me get there. It's 3/18 is actually on Bates page 294.
294, right?
Yeah. Demonstrates 40 minutes of manual therapy with 20 minutes of soft tissue mobilization. Then there is the identification of the performance of some exercise, which appears to be 20 reps of thoracic spine foam roller, and then 20 minutes with a moist hot pack.
Okay. And again, that...
Oh, and ICF, and interferential curve.
Okay, and then using the foam roller on the thoracic spine, that was again outside of the plan of care. That was treating an area.
Well, it was treating the thoracic spine that has not been examined.
All right, and how do those times, do they correlate?
So the conflict we have with the charges, of course, is that the documentation indicates she was only there for 60 minutes. If you add up all of these minutes, even given a minimum of 8 minutes since they charged the therapeutic exercise, the rule would be a minimum of 8 minutes. That would mean that she was actually in the clinic a minimum of 83 minutes, not 60 minutes. So there is a conflict in the billing compared to the documentation in the record.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. Turning to the next note, that would be on dates 392. That would be a note that was March 17th, 2017.
That's April 17th, 2017.
It would be, yes, I apologize. That is correct. And this is